information is free.
The law of media.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Bless you.
But
tonight we care.
Near the border
on
the
law of media.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The Cod police would get him just the same.
There's going to be a crisis which will come along on the 21st or 22nd of January, which we don't even know about right now. Welcome, my friends. It's October 24th, 2008. It's episode 97 of Media Monarchy. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. Coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network. Tons of horrible things to go over this week. 9/11, police state, and mill tech updates. We've got Bayer, Cuomo, DARPA, and survivalism. Surveillance database, friendly fire, Bamford, Blue Beam PSYOP, Trump Pelosi, Powell, and Albright. Presidential selection, threataganda, and so much, so much more, my friends. It's jam-packed 2 hours. News, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. It's episode 97 of MediaMonarchy.com.
One night I was too lazy to pay.
That's brand new music from MGMT. That's called Weekend Wars. And it is. And we are at Weekend War, my friend. It's episode 97 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's October 24th, 2008. October 24th being the day, of course, in 1929 that the Great Crash began. Just let that marinate in your mind for a moment. But let me welcome you. Coming to you, as always, live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and Sunday nights at 7 Eastern time, revereradionetwork.com. Also blasting out on KBFR Boulder, now on 93.9. Just a little jump to the left. Or is it a skip to the right? Also, Ground Zero Radio in Atlanta, 87.9. Big thanks to those guys for replaying Media Monarchy. And, of course, hit me up and make contact. MySpace, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, and Skype. You can, of course, get the podcast anytime. iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. Two episodes a week now. I just recorded episode 96B last night, and so this and that will probably go up at the same time because I'm swimming and drowning in terrible news. And I strive to bring it all to you because, of course, only when you're better informed can you make better decisions about your life. So what we're going to start with is a little bit of news on the march. 9/11, police state, Miltech, geopolitics, and the Econo crash updates. So first, we're going to blast through some 9/11 updates. First up from the AFP, 9/11 memorial to be ready by the 10th anniversary. The long-awaited memorial to the victims of 9/11 will be ready by the 10th anniversary of the tragedy, but not its underground museum, city officials said Thursday. New York State Governor David Patterson said the decision-making process in the rebuilding of Ground Zero had been reformed to promote cooperation between the 19 state agencies and dozens of architects and companies taking part in the development. I'm proud to say that we have resolved the 15 fundamental issues that have stalled this project. Close to the site of the destroyed Twin Towers, a 541-meter, that's 1,776 feet, it's the Freedom Tower. And that skyscraper is due to go up by 2013, but maybe, hopefully, they can hurry up and get it there by December 21st, 2012. Foundation work began last month. Initially, it was expected to be completed by, about now. Now, there's also one from the Washington Times. 9/11 holiday pay for Massachusetts police criticized. They're basically trying to give police officers extra bonus for working on 9/11 anniversaries. However, another interesting bit, as we track the interesting bits from former CIA operative Bob Baer, of course, the man behind Syriana, and all the other things we've brought you in the last several weeks, whether he's saying, of course, bin Laden's dead, and an Iran attack would bring a greater depression to the U.S. Now, however, when met quite amiably by some We Are Change folks, he says he knew a guy who cashed out, quote-unquote, on September 10th.
The last thing I was going to leave you with is National Reconnaissance Office was running a drill, a plane crash into the building, and you know they're staffed by DOD.
I know the guy that went into his broker in San Diego and said, "Catch me out, it's going down tomorrow."
Really?
Yeah.
That tells us something.
What?
That tells us something.
My brother works in the White House.
You say that there's 15 things from the American people about Iran for 30 years. Are you talking about the CIA's involvement in that, in the coup?
They just do that by naturally.
You are involved in the revolution.
That sounds like Stuart Howe of We Are Change. So again, talking to Robert Baer, where he says, I know a guy who cashed out on September 10th because he knew that the shit was about to go down. Just another bit of prior knowledge of 9/11. Now, he goes on to say, and you can watch that whole clip, I just gave you a little 45-second cut, but they reiterate and ask him again about Iran, because again, some of the weird things that we brought you about Baer, how he's always talking about, oh, it's Iran, Iran, Iran. He said there's more to be discovered in Iran, and so when pressed on the issue, they asked him, are you talking about the coup? That would be the CIA-sponsored coup, the overthrow of democratically elected Mohammad Mossadegh in 1953, and it was called Operation Ajax. All declassified. Kermit Roosevelt brags about it, but it's just a conspiracy. If we jump to The Guardian, ex-MI5 chief says that the response to 9/11 was a, quote, huge overreaction. And that's an understatement. GeorgeWashington.blogspot.com notes one of the many things that we've been getting from James Vanford's new book, The Shadow Factory, which we'll get even more into this week. But one of the many revelations out of that book is that the NSA were tapping the 9/11 hijackers' phone calls for 2 years inside the U.S. Surprise, surprise. One from 9/11 blogger, Structural Engineering Council casts doubt on NIST's Building 7 report. Again, surprise, surprise. Again, more from We Are Change. They talk to former New York mayor, or rather New York governor, that's even better, Mario Cuomo.
Governor. Governor.
I think that would be one.
Do you support an investigation into 9/11? A new investigation?
You know, it would be nice to have one because there are a lot of open questions. But I think before you do that, we have so many other things to devote our attention to. I wouldn't do it. We don't need any new issues.
You don't think so? Because 70% of the victims' families' questions were never answered by the commission report.
Yeah.
And Building 7, yeah, I'm sure you know about it.
Yeah.
There are three buildings that fell that day. Building 7 is not even mentioned in the commission.
Yeah.
How can we justify that? And how can we have nobody help? Accountable and set all our domestic and
maybe
foreign policy.
Give it more thought.
Please do, sir. Please do. The victim families really need you to look into it. Thank you, sir.
Maybe I should give it more thought, former New York Governor Mario Cuomo says about 9/11, of course, when confronted with the fact that 70% of the victim's family members want a new investigation. Of course, always putting the lie to, oh, you're just hurting the families. Last couple 9/11 bits from military.com, and I believe originally from the Albuquerque Journal. Bad link, memorial ties Iraq War and 9/11. We've also got a link over to KTVU.com out of California. You can watch a cool little campaign video from Carol Brouillet. And she is campaigning for California's 14th District. It's nice to see a campaign video with real hardcore 9/11 truth and social issues. Former CIA official Kofor Black said that 9/11 could not be averted. That's from the AP at 911blogger.com. From Danger Room, 7 years after 9/11, spies finally forced to share. Of course, talking about how the FBI and CIA need to get along. And finally, from alternate.org, Ultimate 9/11 Truth Showdown. David Ray Griffin versus Matt Taibbi. Of course, Matt Taibbi, Mr. 9/11 truth debunker for Alternate. And of course, David Ray Griffin, noted professor and author of numerous books, 9/11 Contradictions, Debunking 9/11, Debunking the New Pearl Harbor, and on and on. That article is basically a series of exchanges of emails between Griffin and Taibbi. As we shift now in news on the march to Police State USA, vets were arrested and trampled at the third debate. So this from ndbay.org, and you can see gruesome photos where Iraq Veterans Against the War, IVAW.org, guys were arrested and trampled by police state thugs. Now, if we move to FCW.com, FederalComputerWeek.com, U.S. not prepared for EMP attacks. Now, I briefly mentioned this last night on the B-side of 96, but we'll get a little more into it. Written by Alice Lipowitz, again for FCW.com. U.S. not prepared for EMP attacks. Congress and the Bush administration are largely ignoring the threat of a major electromagnetic pulse attack that could shut down large portions of the country's economy by disabling computer systems, power grids, and communications, according to a report from the right-wing Neocon Heritage Foundation. And there is a PDF link for you to download that report from the Heritage Foundation. An electromagnetic pulse is a high-intensity burst of energy that disrupts, shuts down, and in some cases permanently disables electronic systems in a distance of hundreds of miles. It occurs when a nuclear weapon is exploded at high altitude, and non-nuclear EMP-producing weapons can cause similar damage on a smaller scale. The Homeland Security Department has not directly addressed the threat of EMP attacks in the National Infrastructure Protection Plan, the report released October 20th states. Again, the Heritage report states, the threat should be incorporated into national planning and preparedness, it recommends. The article goes on, but of course, we won't follow those recommendations, because even if you do follow the incompetence theory that, oh, well, they're just stupid. What we like to do in this country, and this is pre-9/11, I had already realized this. This is the one political thing I noticed about America, is why we never seem to address the actual roots of problems in this country. We just like to throw a bunch of money at something when it blows up in our face. And so we'll get into more threataganda, and of course, whatever inaugural terror event happens in the next couple of months. It ain't going to be planes into buildings. Will it be EMP? Will it be pandemic? We shall see. If we move to CNN, U.S. policymakers mull creation of domestic intelligence agency. Some folks would call that the Stasi. The Washington Post had an article, DARPA contract description hints at advanced video spying, and there's a lot in there, so thanks to Doug at blacklistednews.com for bringing me that one. Interestingly enough, what goes right along with that, SAIC awarded $18 million contract by DARPA. That's a press release from Science Applications International Corporation. NSA spying and the shredding of the Constitution. That's from Anti-Fascist Calling and Global Research. We've also got U.S. limiting anthrax vaccine legal liability. This is from Global Security. Dateline Washington, the U.S. Health and Human Services Department earlier this month moved to shield government, industry, and business officials from lawsuits filed by those who have received the anthrax vaccine. Health and Human Services Secretary Michael Levitt established legal immunity for public and private officials who oversee the production or distribution of the anthrax vaccine by declaring a, quote, public health emergency due to the risk of a bioterror attack. He said the emergency began on October 1st and would run through December 31st, 2015. U.S. law provides protection from lawsuits to individuals responsible for selected countermeasures, including antibiotics, during a declared emergency. Under the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, PREP, which President Bush signed into law December 2005, a Health and Human Services Secretary emergency declaration can limit financial risk for government program planners and manufacturers or distributors of pharmaceutical countermeasures. One exception to this immunity would be the willful misconduct on the part of covered individuals. The ramifications in this instance could be to prevent individuals who have received one or more anthrax inoculations from taking grievances to court based on claims that the vaccine caused severe adverse reactions or did not work. And of course, the anthrax vaccine has proven particularly controversial following reports of serious adverse events, including some deaths, you know. Whether it's soldiers or homeless people in Poland, they're testing us with their big pharma drugs and giving themselves immunity. So when they declare a national health emergency and they declare that you have to take a forced inoculation, they declare that if it kills you, fuck off. Out of the UK, or rather, no, not out of the UK. I'm sorry. It happens here. It's the TSA. And their untrained thugs, one in particular, has stolen $200,000 worth of travelers' belongings and resold it on eBay. So that's coming from tech.yahoo.com. Thank you, TSA gangsters. Now, here's an interesting one. This from KXAN.com out of Austin, with the video for you up on YouTube.com/MediaMonarchy. Hospital refuses to draw blood for police cases.
Law enforcement officials in one Hill Country county have launched a program to draw blood from DWI suspects who refuse a breathalyzer, but the local hospital is refusing a court order to do it. KXAN's Aaron Carvalho joins us live from Marble Falls to explain. Aaron, what's going on?
Well, Shannon, Marble Falls police pushed to get their new blood warrant program in place 3 weeks ago for law enforcement officials across the county. But little did they know their first DWI suspect, the local hospital tested, would be their last. Now, Seton Highland Lakes Medical Center wrote a letter to local law enforcement and county officials stating effective immediately they will not draw blood under a search warrant. The Burnett County judge and Marble Falls police chief have both tried contacting Seton to find out why. Neither have received an answer. Both wonder the reasoning behind Seton refusing to follow a court order.
That's the question. We asked them to provide us the legality of them being able to say no to a court order.
This afternoon, Seton emailed us a statement saying they will draw a DWI suspect's blood, but they have to meet the following four conditions. Number one, an officer must arrest them. Number two, they must have been operating a vehicle or boat involved in an accident as a result of alcohol. At the time of the arrest, the officer must also believe there's a possibility someone involved in the accident will die or is injured. And number four, the suspect must refuse to submit a blood specimen voluntarily. Now, under any other condition, Seton states the law is unclear and it is questionable whether a licensed hospital can draw blood from a person without an order from a qualified practitioner. Now, in the meantime, Marble Falls PD and Burnett County are taking DWI suspects to Lano Memorial Hospital for blood tests under a search warrant. In the meantime, the county and Seton hospitals hope that they can both come to a solution soon. We're live in Marble Falls. Aaron Cargyle, KXAN, Austin News.
Thank God for some kind of pushback. So that's a follow-up from a story we reported several months ago where the police were trying to take the blood of people that were suspected of being DUI. So now we at least have people in the health industry fighting back saying, no, we're not going to take blood. So we'll see where that goes. Telecom spying amnesty is unconstitutional. That's from Threat Level, referencing an EFF report. 56 arrested in dark market sting, says the FBI. That's as well from Threat Level. Jumping back to 911blogger.com and more on James Bamford and the Shadow Factory. We've got Bamford's dubious sense of irony when it comes to Israeli firms cornering the market on NSA's major mass surveillance. We also got reaction to Bamford interview about CIA protection of alleged 9/11 hijackers Khalid Al-Midar and Al-Hazmi, H-A-Z-M-I. We also have James Bamford on Democracy Now! That whole six-part video is posted up. We're going to get into that a little later when we dive in with a little more specificity. Another one from Danger Room, top NSA scribe, takes us inside the Shadow Factory. So again, a whole bunch of news about James Bamford. Videos, interviews, all kinds of stuff to check it out there. However, we're going to now move to NoOneHasToDieTomorrow.com, a website I'd never heard of. However, thanks to them, we have an article called British NGO Forecasts 5 Brave New World Scenarios Set in 2030. So, of course, an NGO is a non-governmental organization. That's where a lot of the action happens. The propagandists are working overtime to fear the public into submitting to their global warming threats. The mainstream media is reporting on what the world will be like in 22 years based on a fictitious account made up by a non-governmental organization known as Forum for the Future.org. a self-proclaimed, quote, charity committed to sustainable development, end quote, working on behalf of big business. The 76-page report titled Climate Futures, A Response to Climate Change in 2030, was created in collaboration with Hewlett-Packard Labs. And there's a link, and you can download that whole massive 76-page PDF. They outline five possible scenarios of what type of brave new world hell we could be living in by the year 2030. Efficiency first, service transformation, redefining progress, environmental war, economy, and protectionist world. Each one has its own timeline, a make-believe history with a wide array of things that may occur between 2009 and 2030 if we don't start making global warming our number one priority. So they dive further into that, but just let me reiterate the five Brave New World scenarios. Efficiency first, service transformation, redefining progress, environmental war economy, and protectionist world. British NGO forecasts five Brave New World scenarios for us. Thank you, right-wing think tanks, yet again. Last little bit under Police State USA. After years of stonewalling, New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin finally admits to illegal gun confiscation in New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina. That brought to us from our controlled opposition friends at the NRA. One in three recent Atlanta Police Academy graduates have criminal records. That's from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And finally, Bush signs law creating copyright czar. That's from Threat Level. So yet another law to make more criminals and another czar to oversee it. However, that wasn't the final one. There is one more under Police State. Orwellian UK angers people with tree cameras and snooping kids. This is originally from Bloomberg. Hidden in foliage next to a path in the southeast England seaside town of Hastings are digital cameras. Their targets? Litter bugs and dog walkers. The electronic eyes feed images to a monitoring unit where they're scanned and stored as evidence to prosecute people who discard garbage or fail to clean up after their pets. It's becoming a bit Big Brother-like, said Sandra Roberts, 50, a Hastings kiosk manager, invoking, of course, Orwell's 1949 book, 1984, about a Britain where authorities pry into all aspects of citizens' lives. Local authorities are adopting phone record logging, email taps, and camera surveillance to police such offenses as welfare fraud, unlawful dumping of waste, and sick day fakery. Telecom companies are about to join the list of crime monitors. Already, 4.5 million CCTV cameras watch public places across Britain, or about one camera for every 15 people, the highest ratio in the world. There's too much of it now, all this spying, says Ivor Quintinson, 80, a retired owner of these, or rather of three hardware stores, who also lives in Hastings. The town spokeswoman, who declined to be identified, said spying is the most effective way of dealing with something residents complain about the most. Spying is the most effective way. You know, and that reminds me, as I was scanning back through Media Monarchy, looking at the archives, there was a good one we hit some ways back, and I believe we called it Andy Griffith versus Homeland Security, but it was basically an old clip of the Andy Griffith show where Opie tries to secretly record someone, and Andy tells him that's not the way we do things. But of course, that is the way we do things, because 9/11 changed everything. If we move now to the military tech subheading of News on the March, we've got a new video game, literally a mind game, this from the AFP and out of Japan. Willpower is set to replace fast fingers in a new video game in which players move characters through a headset that monitors their brain waves. California-based NeuroSky Incorporated showed off the new headset named Mindset at the Tokyo Game Show, the industry's biggest exhibition, which opened near the Japanese capital Thursday. That's a couple Thursdays ago, I should say. The Mindset monitors whether the player is focused or relaxed and accordingly moves the character on a personal computer. We brought this to the game show as a new interface, a new platform for game creators. Children's games using the system will hit the U.S. market next year. We are exploring the use of brainwaves in the game industry because games are fun and so close to people. Once people get used to the idea of using brainwaves for various applications, I hope we will see various products using this technology. As you strap on in to the Matrix, my friend, are troops becoming pill poppers? Yes, of course they are. So that's brought to us from Danger Room. However, it's mainstream report. It's AP and Reuters. Tons of our military are on pharmaceutical drugs. They always have been, but now it's more so, of course. We've always had criminals and thugs and psychopaths and gang members in military, but now there's more so. Dirty bomb charge fizzles, that's from military.com. We've also got the Iraq War as eugenics genocide masquerading as an anti-terror op. That's from the Canadian and the AgoraCosmopolitan.com. DHS says Timothy McVeigh isn't a terrorist, but Maryland activists are. That's from GreenIsTheNewRed.com. Detainees fill Pentagon DNA databank, again from Danger Room. And we're going to return one more time to them. But first, we've got a three-part video, just a quick clip. This one's called The Third Nuclear Bomb, a Gulf War Veterans Accusation.
Can you introduce yourself?
My name is Jim Brown. I'm a veteran of the United States military, specifically the Army, about 10 years worth of experience.
When have you been in Iraq?
I was in Saudi Arabia in support of the troops that went to Iraq, and that started on September 25th, and I actually left the area of Saudi Arabia around February 15th, 1991.
What happened over there that has never been reviewed before?
The United States military, in conjunction with their allies, dropped a nuclear weapon, approximately 5 kilotons in yield, in the area of Basra, Iraq.
Where was it used?
Yes, the bomb was used between the area of the city of Basra and the Iranian border.
Who dropped it?
It was the United States military, and the weapon that they used was a 5 kiloton, sometimes called a dialable yield atomic weapon.
What kind of weapon was it?
It is essentially a heavy-duty penetrator, and when it's dropped, it actually penetrates the target, goes to the center of the target, or in this case, into the ground very deeply, and explodes there. It's also used for area denial, which means that it irradiates the area that is dropped in temporarily, and it's a pretty good message if you want to tell people to stay away. It's also known as a bunker buster.
So that's a Gulf War I veteran basically saying, yes, we've dropped nukes in Iraq. Which, of course, leads to the mysterious Gulf War syndrome. But it's not so mysterious when you know that you're breathing in DU. Finally, again, from Danger Room, new killer drones could be piloted by teenagers. Today, only experienced Air Force pilots are allowed to remotely operate the American fleet of killer drones. Tomorrow, the heavily armed robotic planes could be flown by 19-year-olds barely out of basic training. The Army and Marine Corps use Shadow Unmanned Aerial Vehicles, UAVs, to spy on suspected militants. Not only are they smaller, cheaper, lighter, and lower flying than the Air Force's array of missile-laden Predator and Reaper drones, but Shadows are considered a tactical asset, meant to watch over relatively small patches of ground for relatively small units. Predators, on the other hand, are theater or operational level assets controlled by generals and sent all over. As a result, ground forces, often the most junior of non-com officers to fly the Shadows, teenagers who sometimes never been in combat. In contrast, the Air Force only allows rated pilots, guys trained to operate B-52s or an F-15, to fly their Predators. You have to understand flight to know how to talk to a controller. It takes an aviator to do that, Air Force Colonel Tom Earhart told Noah Shackman of Danger Room a few years back. But those aviators are worn out from the nonstop drone piloting duty, and it often takes a while to get a big UAV like a Predator over to where a captain or colonel needs it. Which is why there's a new military development program underway to weaponize Shadow for special forces inside Defense Reports, defensenewsstand.com. The goal is to pair firepower with sophisticated visual sensors, giving lower echelon UAV operators capabilities heretofore reserved for operational level unmanned systems, which means those young privates and corporals and specialists could be controlling killer drones someday soon. It's part of a broader Pentagon effort to make armed UAVs cheaper and more plentiful. John Wilcox with the Office of the Secretary of Defense says, we're also going to look at weaponizing a couple more small UAVs. With 1 to 5 pound weapons, these tiny killers could take out high-value targets or hold a target at risk until bigger and better operational platforms with more ordnance get onto the battlefield. So, ultimately, new killer drones could be piloted by teenagers who have been trained all their life by playing shoot-em-up video games and chugging Mountain Dew in the basement. It won't be any different. They won't be in their mom's basement anymore. They'll be in some military basement. But they still will be divorced from the action and they're desensitized to it. So push a button, kill a raghead. What the fuck, dude? Although in a little bit we're going to hear what happens when the tables get turned in an ugly little friendly fire video. Moving now to some geopolitics, Putin's dog gets a long-promised GPS collar. That's from GPSDaily.com, and there's a gruesome picture of Putin's devil dog that now has a global positioning system collar. Despite precautions, U.S. airstrikes kill Afghan allies, again from Danger Room. There's a video, I'm not going to play a clip, but it's excellent. It's from Russia Today, Globalization, Threat or Hope. If we jump to techradar.com, Nicolas Sarkozy has been a victim of online robbery. Somebody hacked into his bank account and took all his money. From Yahoo, thousands march in Baghdad against the U.S. pact that we mentioned last week. Of course, you know that they're going to end the war by 2011. I mentioned there was also a bridge for sale in conjunction with that pact. Out of Russia, RIA Novosti, ex-Soviet states to hold joint air defense drills in 2009. But then if we jump over to the UK, uk.news.yahoo.com, warning over huge terror threat. This originally from ITN, a counterterrorism minister has warned Al-Qaeda are planning complex plots against Britain. Lord West, the former head of the Royal Navy, said there was a huge threat from extremists as the House of Lords continued debating the counterterrorism bill. So, of course, you have to shake people up with some threat-aganda. There's another great plot building up again, and we are monitoring this. Some of the measures that we have put into place in the last 15 months have made us safer, but that does not mean that we are safe. The threat is huge. It dipped slightly and is now rising again with the context of severe. There are large, complex plots. We unraveled one, which caused damage to Al-Qaeda, and the plots faded slightly. However, another great plot is building up, which we are monitoring. Now, of course, that's all they'll say about it. They never have any actual evidence or anything they're going to say. They just say, be afraid, boogie boogie! And they're able to pass more draconian laws. If we move now to WCCO, report says now that the U.S. has moved to remove North Korea from the vaunted Axis of Evil terrorist.
North Korea is no longer on the U.S. terrorism blacklist. The State Department says North Korea has agreed to every nuclear inspection demand from the Bush administration.
Every element of verification that we saw is included in this package. It's an important point. Every single thing that we saw going in is part of this package.
North Korea will allow atomic experts to take samples and conduct forensic tests at all of its declared nuclear facilities and undeclared sites. This agreement is intended to salvage a faltering nuclear disarmament accord before President Bush leaves office. Well, for the first time in nearly 2 months, North Korea has released pictures of leader Kim Jong-il. Those photos show the reclusive leader looking generally well, despite reports he has been ill and recently underwent brain surgery. Kim appears healthy in the pictures, but really, we have no idea when they were taken. North Korea denies that he's ill.
Last couple bits on geopolitics. Russia says to the U.S., hey, let's team up to fight pirates. And finally, Hugo Chavez names Comrade Bush a socialist.
Oh, that hurts, doesn't it?
Damn. The truth hurts when one who would know calls you one. The last bit under News on the March. Econo crash. In hard times, my friends, some flirt with survivalism.
This is Rob, a former technology professional turned survivalist. He's not what you might expect, a loner hunkered down in a remote cabin with a cache of guns. He's a Seattle resident, a former yuppie with a wife and three teenage kids. But like other survivalists, he's been preparing for disaster, an economic disaster which he believes may be starting now.
If you ask people in your grandparent generation what was the Depression like, things are a little bit different this time. We're not a 50% agrarian society anymore. We're mostly urban-suburban. It's going to be worse this time. You can't just move back in with grandparents and live off the farm and they're feeding you. It's no longer an option.
So for Rob, who asked us not to publish his full name, a top priority has been to stockpile food.
I store away dry goods just like my grandparents, great-grandparents would have. And those will keep about a year or two.
He now gardens, makes his own bread, and raises chickens. Several years ago, Raw took the money he made in the tech sector to reduce family debt to zero and radically cut back on luxuries like eating out. He's pressing his kids to learn basic skills, including sewing, shooting, and first aid. These days, the family rarely drives anywhere. Rob does many of his errands on foot. In part, these are ways to prepare for a much more difficult, even third-worldly future.
It also saves money, and saving money is good because sometimes you can buy yourself out of trouble.
Rob runs a website called MutuallyAssuredSurvival.com where he discusses economy and ways to weather hardship, not so much natural disaster or nuclear strikes as the possibility of financial paralysis.
For instance, strategy that usually you hunker down, you do not flee for it. Generally, like an earthquake, you stay where you are. There's a banking holiday, you stay where you are. You don't want to be stranded somewhere when your debit card stops working.
But Rob and many of his readers, who have money and gold and offshore accounts, are prepared to run long and far if a bad situation became a catastrophe.
Most of us probably have plans to potentially leave the country altogether.
Of course, it's much too late for that, my friends. We're going to have to save this ship or go down with it. So that video is called In Hard Times, Some Flirt with Survivalism, and it's up on youtube.com/Media Monarchy. If we move to the Washington Post, Wachovia posts largest ever loss for a bank. USA Today has homeless numbers alarming. There's a video from InfoWars and from Press TV. Oil and the economic meltdown. Here's our man Alex Jones putting out some 9/11 truth and New World Order truth on International Press TV.
This is the New World Order. 5 years ago, we said in 2008 this would really start, and it's on record. I made films about it. 3 years ago, I released a film about it. Last year, I released a film documenting it, showing how after they had started the implosion, they would then call for a world banking system run by the private banks that would set the price of currencies each day and a global regulation over the financial system worldwide in the name of stopping the type of crisis we're now seeing. The very global banks that engineered the derivatives crisis and everything we're seeing, the very global banks that are still suppressing the price of gold, the very global banks that are manipulating all the commodities, they are the ones that engineered all this. Also the one that changed the rules here in the U.S. in 99 so they could do all this leveraging with unlimited fractional reserve banking. And now they're posing as the savior, saying we need a global government run by the banks, a global government run
now, Alex
by
Jones,
the
if
banks.
I may
the very
depart from you for a moment.
There is tons of that, and that's just a little one-minute clip. There's several videos up on YouTube and Press TV and InfoWars.com. Oil and the economic meltdown. Another one, but one I don't have time to play a clip from, even though I really wanted to. I just didn't have time to edit it. I did finally get the recording, and I mentioned it now, of course, several weeks ago. Richard Andrew Grove of 8thEstate.com and 911Synchronicity.com appeared on Deadline Live with Jack Blood back, I believe, September 18th.
as the crash was a crashing, to talk about AIG and their connections to 9/11. So that whole, I believe, 40-minute video with Richard Andrew Grove is posted up. Richard Andrew Grove on AIG and 9/11. Another one, good Lord, from Danger Room. Spies worry hackers could fuel financial panic. And, of course, they say, oh, we all laughed when Chuck Norris talked about economic terrorism going on. However, maybe he's right. And, of course, again, it's not going to be planes into buildings. It's going to be an EMP blocking out your ATM. ATM meet EMP. Calls for a new global financial order increase daily to shut down Chicago government for 6 days. That's from Reuters. U.S. summons super elite bankers to a meeting. That's from economicpolicyjournal.com. Paulson doles out $125 billion to Wall Street elite. Icelandic shoppers splurge as currency woes reduce food imports. That's from Bloomberg. You can also read it much more short in a way that Iceland basically had runs on the grocery stores. There's a video. No, not with that one. There's a video for our next one where Donald Trump, and this will not be our first mention of the big pimp Donald Trump, says it basically feels like socialism, but I really like it. Gordon Brown, of course, again saying use this crisis to create new financial world order. Blatant banker manipulation of gold prices. Gas companies disconnecting thousands. That's from HuffingtonPost.com. The quadrillion-dollar powder keg waiting to blow. That's from Bob Chapman, TheInternationalForecaster.com. World Bank computer networks under siege. That's from Fox News. World Bank disputes it. Fox News says we stand behind our story. How to save the U.S. economy from globalresearch.a. GM and Ford may face bankruptcy on slowdown. This from Bloomberg. General Motors and Ford Motor and Chrysler, the big three U.S. automakers, may be forced into bankruptcy as the global credit freeze damps U.S. sales, S&P analyst Robert Schultz said. So the big three automakers may be going down, it looks like. Merging may be the only way they will survive. And again, what does it say when the only last few things that we used to make, you know, stuff that people wanted in the world that we would make, we don't make it anymore. So not that I'm all in love with those sorts of things, but when you can't make a fucking beer or a car or something that people want, your economy's pretty much screwed, and that's why we're going into service economy and snitch CIA economy. Get your Homeland Security degree now. It's the only growth industry out there. Finally, again from Bloomberg, from Italian fascist Silvio Berlusconi, world leaders may close world banks. And again, it all ties in together, my friends. So check it. That's just news on the march at the top of the page at MediaMonarchy.com right now. That basically gets us up to date. There's so much going on, it's kind of hard to stay on top of it all. But as long as we were talking about the Econo crash, let's get a little real straight talk. Some real change from someone who would know, and for someone who knows and has been saying it for, oh, I don't know, a couple decades. But basically, we're going to all suffer and pay for the bailout.
Well, the credit markets are starting to loosen up a bit, at least from what we've seen this week. Is that a sign that maybe it is working?
Well, maybe to some degree on the short run, but that just means that we'll have more inflation. You can't create $5 trillion out of thin air and not expect inflation. So although the dollar may be up a little bit right now because the markets are a little calmer, this just means that in time, we're going to all suffer and pay for this, and we're going to pay for it with higher prices. And this is the serious problem. It's the attack on the dollar system. They're trying to save the dollar, but this system that we've had since 1971 is non-viable, and it's coming to an end. That's what this whole story is about, the end of a monetary system that we've had since 1971, and something has to give. You just can't create more money out of thin air and propping up everybody. It's an immoral system. You're asking the poor people to bail out the rich. You're asking the innocent people to bail out the guilty. You're asking people to just totally defy the Constitution, because there's no place in the Constitution that says that we can do these things. Besides, economically, it's a disaster. This is going to cause a great deal of harm. It's like a drug addict taking a strong fix. It feels better for a day or two. But believe me, we're going to kill the patient. And the patient here is the dollar system and our whole entire world economy.
Have you heard anything?
I would say, let's get off this addiction.
And Congressman, have you heard anything from either of the presidential candidates about their economic plans that you think are good things that need to be implemented?
No, not really. But it's tough to find out the good parts. I do think that John McCain has a better approach to the medical problem, and Obama has a better approach to trying to save some money by coming home from Iraq. You know, we're spending $10 billion a month over there, so we could save a lot of money, and that money should be spent back here. But quite frankly, how can we trust anybody? Because, you know, when it comes to the bailout, how do they differ? Both McCain and
right.
Obama comes rushing back to Washington and vote for the bailout.
Well, they both approved it, and it approved both houses. I know you voted against, but that leads me to another question. If Barack Obama does end up winning, it looks like the Democrats would really have a trifecta in Congress, both houses and the White House. What does that mean for the American people and also for the GOP?
Well, I mean, it's a disaster for the country and everybody, because even with all the shortcomings of John McCain, his strongest argument to be president is keep the Congress and the presidency in separate hands. The American people are going to be a lot better off if they're fighting a little bit instead of just having no restraints whatsoever.
That's a poor argument for McCain. All right, well, we're going to have to leave it there, but as always, sometimes the voice in the wilderness, but you know, you certainly bring up some good points this morning. Representative Ron Paul, always great to have you on the show. Thanks.
Thank you.
That's Ron Paul on CNN just a couple of days ago. Of course, not so much a voice in the wilderness, and he does bring up the, as he said, weak yet interesting argument for McCain is that he'd be a complete lame dead duck that wouldn't get shit done because nobody'd like him and he'd be fought in Congress. However, of course, with Obama, we get the trifecta and we'll goose-step our way into the brave new Brzezinski world. So, let's shift into presidential selection 08 with a quick glance to Google News right now, October 24th, 2008. Obama visits grandmother in Hawaii. Democratic candidate Barack Obama was visiting his ailing grandmother in Hawaii on Friday and told reporters he feared that the woman who raised him after his mother died would not live until Election Day. Also from the New York Times, Obama arrives in Hawaii to visit ailing grandmother, and, you know, hell, while he's there, he may as well fake up a birth certificate so Phil Berg and ObamaCrimes.com will go away, but we'll see. So everyone's in all the big tizzy this week over all the great war criminals that have come out to endorse Obama. Now, they try and spin it like it's some great indictment of conservatism, again, as was just mentioned in the last clip, and we're going to get into that. First, however, let's have a little quote. This is from a book called The Grand Chessboard, written by Barack Obama's chief foreign policy advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, the creator of Alcyaeta. Moreover, as America becomes an increasingly multicultural society, it may find it more difficult to fashion a consensus on foreign policy issues, except in the circumstance of a truly massive and widely perceived direct external threat. Basically saying it's hard to get people to behind your agenda unless you scare the fuck out of them. So, from Press TV with my own altered headline, Obama's puppet master says Colin Powell's nod indicts the GOP ticket. Colin Powell's endorsement of Barack Obama shows a comprehensive indictment of the Republican side, a former U.S. National Security Advisor says, Mr. Trilateral Commission. I was impressed by the comprehensive indictment of the current Republican ticket that was implicit in Powell's statement. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, told the Huffington Post, with a link for you. On Sunday, U.S. President George W. Bush's first Secretary of State, Colin Powell, endorsed Democratic candidate Obama in an interview on NBC's Meet the Press, saying, "I think that Senator Obama brings a fresh set of eyes, fresh set of ideas to the table." Brzezinski said, "It was not just about foreign affairs. It was a comprehensive statement that conveys the message that the more traditionally centrist Republicans are coming to view the McCain-Palin ticket as some sort of deviation, some sort of break with the genuine traditions of the Republican Party." Brzezinski also rejected the notion that the endorsement could be discounted by undecided white voters as mere racial solidarity. Because of his military service, his role in the first Persian Gulf War, his status as the past Secretary of State, it's put him above the racial divide. He's seen more as an elder statesman. Earlier, Brzezinski warned that if Republican candidate McCain becomes the next president, the world will move toward World War IV. Well, if McCain is president and his Secretary of State is Joe Lieberman and his Secretary of Defense is Giuliani, we'll be moving towards World War IV that they've been favoring and predicting. Ahead of November 4th election and after three presidential debates between Obama and McCain, the American public now are waiting to see who will lead the country to put an end to the current financial crisis amid other domestic issues. Again, giving you the lie that either of these foundation puppets control anything. So let's hear from one of the chief war criminals himself. Here is Powell on Meet the Press.
For a candidate who is drawing big, enthusiastic crowds in states the Republicans once considered safe bets, for a candidate who has so much money his treasure chest dwarfs his opponents, a record $150 million raised last month alone,
the winds of change are blowing.
It just seemed to keep getting better for Barack Obama.
Today I'm beyond honored. I am deeply humbled to have the support of General Colin Powell.
The significance of the endorsement from a Republican who not only campaigned hard 8 years ago for George Bush's election, but who served in Bush's cabinet as Secretary of State, is self-evident. He explained his conversion to reporters.
And I think Senator Obama has captured the feeling of the young people of America and is reaching out in a more diverse, inclusive way across our society.
Indeed, Obama's campaign could not have written a better endorsement than the one the former National Security Advisor and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff offered. It was an endorsement which included a blistering critique of the Republican campaign tactics, and specifically, John McCain's selection of Sarah Palin as his running mate. And in his statement, Powell said Obama presented a more positive choice for the country.
Senator Obama has demonstrated the kind of calm, patient, intellectual, steady approach to problem solving that I think we need in this country.
And that is just the kind of high-profile pat on the back that Obama will use to fight off Republican charges that he lacks the experience and the ability to be president. Dean Reynolds, CBS News, Chicago.
I'm so proud and humbled that a war criminal endorses me. God! Now, of course, we'll get into that in just a moment. Colin Powell, of course, involved in most major U.S. foreign policy debacles of the last couple decades, whether it's Vietnam or the first Iraq War or weapons of mass destruction and yellow cake and Niger and bullshit. But let's jump to the next post, Election 08. Jesus endorses Obama, or it's about the same as Coke versus Pepsi. You decide. So I made my little snide editorial note that it's nauseating to watch everybody salivate over who's endorsing the Obamasiah as if it's some big, bold, and daring stance. Ooh, way to pick one thing over the other in a field of two. Now, of course, there's only two puppets in the phony left-right paradigm. But there were and are tons of other candidates, so if Powell of the Washington Post had endorsed Ron Hobbs or Santa Claus, then that would be bold and daring, but it still wouldn't make a goddamn bit of difference. There's some links for you there. We covered some of those other seemingly oddball presidential candidates that are on the ballot in West Virginia, like Ron Hobbs and Santa Claus. However, more seriously, A new article from Webster Tarpley. Sir Powell lies about Iraq and Obama. Of course, Tarpley has two new books, Obama, The Postmodern Coup, and the unauthorized biography of Barack H. Obama. So again, new article from Webster Tarpley, Sir Powell's Lies About Iraq and Obama. Colin Powell, who 5 years ago deliberately lied to the UN Security Council about non-existent weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, now craves public attention for his endorsement of the totalitarian demagogue Obama. Powell is promising national rebirth under Obama, the evident darling of the ruling financier elite. Does Sir Colin, who was knighted by the Queen of England for his services in killing Arabs, still believe in Saddam's WMDs? It looks like the same people who brought us the catastrophic Iraq War are determined to install Obama in the White House. Powell is one of the most pompous and monumental failures in American public life. He has played a leading role in every U.S. policy debacle of the last half century, including Vietnam, the Iraq-Kuwait War, and now the Iraq War. He also served as a helper to Frank Carlucci in suppressing the White House evidence that would have sent Bush the Elder to the federal pen as a result of Iran-Contra gun running and drug running 20 years ago. Powell is known to get his marching orders from an intelligence network that stretches from the CIA to the Pentagon, and which includes such unsavory figures as Richard Armitage, the man who outed Valerie Plame, who is probably still Powell's best friend. Powell has brought this country many disasters, and now he wants to bring us a truly incalculable one, a seizure of power by the totalitarian trio of Obama, Pelosi, and Reid. And there's a link there. You can listen to a recent interview with Webster Tarpley and lawyer Philip J. Berg of ObamaCrimes.com. However, now let's get into a little bit of the threadaganda that ties into Powell. We're just going to touch on it here and get deeper into it in a moment. First, Kurt Nimmo, TruthNews.us, Biden's admonition, plebs to suffer if Obama is elected. In a striking moment of candor, Joe Biden tells us would-be President Obama will face, quote, an international crisis within his first 6 months in power, and he will need supporters to stand by him as he makes tough and possibly unpopular decisions. This coming from Matthew Jaffe on ABC News' Political Radar blog with a link for you. Speaking at a Seattle fundraiser, Biden said this test would likely unfold in the Middle East or Russia, and it would likely be coupled with the economy. So more threadaganda in just a few minutes. First, there's also one from thinkprogress.org. 26 papers that backed Bush in 2004 have switched to Obama, again, as if we're supposed to be amazed at their bold and brave stance of picking one guy over the other. And again, they're the media. They lick their finger and see which way the wind's going to blow, and then they shift and head you off at the pass. Jumping to my home state of West Virginia and some unfortunate vote fraud, or at least some stinky activity going on in southern West Virginia. So first, from the Charleston Gazette, more West Virginia voters say machines are switching votes. Three Putnam County voters say electronic voting machines changed their votes from Democrat to Republican when they cast their early ballots last week. This is the second West Virginia county where voters have reported this problem, with a link for you to the first from WVGazette.com. Last week, three voters in Jackson County told the Charleston Gazette their electronic vote for Barack Obama kept flipping to John McCain. In both counties, Republicans are responsible for overseeing elections. Both county clerks said the problem is isolated. They also blamed voters for not being more careful. People make mistakes more than machines, said, of course, Jackson County Clerk Jeff Waybright, who we'll hear more from in a little bit. Shelba Ketchum, a 69-year-old nurse retired from Thomas Memorial Hospital, described what happened Friday at the Putnam County Courthouse in Winfield. I pushed buttons and they all came up Republican, she said. I hit Obama and it switched to McCain. I am really concerned about that. If McCain wins, there was something wrong with the machines. I asked them for a printout of my votes, Ketchum said, but they said it was in the machine and I couldn't get it. I didn't feel right when I left the courthouse. My son felt the same way. Sorry, we can't show you. It's a paperless trail that you can't follow. if Homer Simpson couldn't do it right in the upcoming Halloween episode, then what hope do we have? If we move to the Washington Post, thousands face mix-up in voter registrations. Thousands of voters across the country must reestablish their eligibility in the next 3 weeks in order for their votes to count on November 4th as a result of new state registration systems that are incorrectly rejecting them. The challenges have led to a dozen lawsuits, testy arguments among state officials, and escalating partisan battles. Because many voters may not know what their names have been flagged, eligibility questions could cause added confusion on Election Day beyond the delays that may come with a huge turnout. The scramble to verify voter registrations is happening as states switch from locally managed lists to statewide databases. So this issue made its way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which blocked a challenge to 200,000 Ohio voters whose registration data conflicted with other state records. And that's from the New York Times. If we move to the Wall Street Journal, Obama-Sia rally draws 100,000 in Missouri. Of course, Missouri, the state of Obama truth squads and putting law enforcement after you if you say unpopular or false. You're lying. You're lying about Obama. They'll send the police out to arrest you. We just said that 2 weeks ago. And remember, the governor of Missouri, Matt Blunt, issued a press statement decrying the, quote, police state tactics of the Obama campaign. From that very state, Obama attracted 100,000 people at a Saturday rally, his biggest crowd ever at a U.S. event. Sorry, Portland. The crowd assembled under the Gateway Arch. Obama, always with his sacred symbology, whether it's giving the speech between the two pillars in Denver or the Gateway Arch. So, the thirsty masses turned out to drink the Kool-Aid from the Obama-Sia. There's one from the Palestine think tank, and this is returning, of course, to the inflammatory DVD known as Obsession. So there's an article, Who Put Hate in My Sunday Paper? Something strange has been showing up inside the Sunday newspaper of many people, buried in comics and coupons and advertisements, is a controversial DVD called Obsession. Now, it goes through where this thing was sent out, but the interesting thing about this article that is heavily, heavily, heavily sourced, I thought I added a lot of links to things, the article's worth checking out because it basically tracks down who's behind it, and of course, it's right-wing Christian Zionist nut jobs. Surprise, surprise. If we return to the AFP, Obamacare swap accusations of voter fraud. Of course, this ties back into Acorn and all that. McCain and Obama's campaign swapped accusations of rampant and widespread vote fraud as legal battles over who ought to be allowed to cast a ballot ensnared the race to the White House. An interesting one here, last bit from the third and final debate from many days ago now. My girlfriend caught this, and I was glad that somebody else caught it, too, and pulled out the clip and posted it up on YouTube, where McCain calls JFK's assassination an intervention.
When Senator Obama was first asked, he said, any place, any time. The way Barry Goldwater and Jack Kennedy agreed to do before the intervention of the tragedy at Dallas. So I think the tone of this campaign could have been very different. And the fact is, it's gotten pretty tough.
Of course, it was an intervention. An intervention is a well-known CIA term for an assassination operation and also commonly phrased in terms of military interventions. So, of course, yeah, McCain was basically telling the truth. Now, he did some weird and scratched his nose and changed it to tragedy. So, of course, watching the body language, I think they say that, you know, when you grab your nose, it means you're lying. A hypothetical question from winterpatriot.blogspot.com. Hypothetically speaking, if an election takes place next month as planned, and if Barack Obama leads in the polls before the election, and if huge numbers of Democratic-leaning voters are illegally barred from voting, and if exit polls show Obama winning anyway, and if John McCain then gets elected president, then what do you think Obama will do about it? A, the same thing as Al Gore, or B, the same thing as John Kerry? Hypothetically speaking. And we'll get to something in just a little bit about what you might do, unfortunately. Another one from Kurt Nimmo. If elected, Obama will declare the evil CO2 as a dangerous pollutant. In an interview with Bloomberg's Jim Efstathiou Jr., I mangled that name, it's a difficult one. Barack Obama's energy advisor, Jason Grummet, said if elected, Obama will classify carbon dioxide, what plants breathe, what we exhale, so we can get oxygen back, carbon dioxide as a dangerous pollutant. Obama will tell the EPA that it may use the 1990 Clean Air Act to set emission limits. This all, again, according to Grummet, and he will likely do this immediately upon taking office. David Buchbinder, chief climate counsel for the Sierra Club, told Bloomberg, a global carbon tax is not so much about limiting CO2 as it is a scheme designed to pay for world government and corporate globalism. You're paying to pollute. Carbon credits, carbon tax. The climate change control bill, strongly supported by Obama, calls for an international governing regime to monitor and regulate carbon dioxide and carbon footprints from discovery to production to consumption at a cost of $50 trillion globally and at a cost of $8 trillion for the U.S. taxpayers, all to be paid for by a global tax whose monies will be used to establish a world government body, writes Patrick Briley over on newswithviews.com. So again, the coming enviro-tyranny, green is the new red, my friends. If we move to businessandmedia.org, it's the pimp again, pimp of the nation. Donald Trump says Pelosi should have impeached Bush.
I don't think that Barack Obama or John McCain had that much influence as to what happened with what's going on with the economy.
Nancy Pelosi, the speaker?
Well, you know, when she first got in and was named speaker, I met her, and I'm very impressed by her. I think she's a very impressive person. I like her a lot. But I was surprised that she didn't do more in terms of Bush and going after Bush. It was almost, it just seemed like she was going to really look to impeach Bush and get him out of office, which personally I think would have been a wonderful thing.
They're impeaching him?
Absolutely, for the war. For the war.
Because of the conduct.
Well, he lied. He got us into the war with lies. And, I mean, look at the trouble Bill Clinton got into with something that was totally unimportant. And they tried to impeach him, which was nonsense. And yet Bush got us into this horrible war with lies, by lying, by saying they had weapons of mass destruction, by saying all sorts of things that turned out not to be true.
Their argument is they weren't lying, that was the intelligence that he was presented, and it wasn't as if he was just lying about it.
I don't believe that.
You believe that it was a deliberate lie?
I don't believe it. I don't think you believe it either, Wolf. You're a very, very intelligent young man. I don't think you believe it either. So,
by the way, thank you for calling me a young man.
Yeah, younger is more important than intelligence. Yeah. The fact is that he lied. And he got us into a war that was a horrendous mistake. And any way you take it, that war was a mistake.
So you think he should have been impeached? Because
look, it wasn't Saddam Hussein that attacked the World Trade Center, okay? In fact, those people, when they sent their families back, most of them went back to Saudi Arabia. It wasn't Saddam Hussein that took down the World Trade Center. And in fact, Saddam Hussein killed terrorists. They had very few terrorists because he didn't want terrorists in Iraq, and he killed terrorists. So we go and attack Saddam Hussein. Now, Iraq now is the number one breeding ground for terrorists. All the terrorists go to Iraq to learn their trade. You know, we all have trades, right? And they go to Iraq. But you didn't have that when Saddam Hussein was running Iraq with an iron fist. Now you do. Now, we took out Saddam Hussein. What have we created? A mess. And the day we leave Iraq, it's going to be forget.
Let's talk a little bit about the billions that are being pumped into the banks.
Well, let's talk a little bit about one other thing about Iraq. They have hundreds of millions of dollars, which was just recently found in the banks of New York.
$87 billion surplus.
Hundreds of billions.
You think that's more than the 80?
I think it's much more.
Yeah.
And it's building up every day.
Because of the oil.
Are we not entitled to anything? They have so much money, they don't know what to do with it. Are we not entitled to anything?
Because the United States is spending about $10 billion a month in Iraq, and you want the Iraqis to start spending
money. The United States has been stupidly managed for the last 8 years.
So on this issue, you give Bush a...
On that issue? A F minus.
All right.
On the issue of the war, an F minus.
So his "I like socialism" statement earlier notwithstanding, it sounds like Donald Trump is starting to ask some pertinent questions like, huh, why didn't Pelosi go for impeachment after we voted in the Democrats saying they were going to impeach and end the war? Huh. So hopefully if he follows those questions and reaches the logical conclusion, is that they're all a bunch of gangsters in collusion with each other. He's a big business guy. He should fucking figure that out. Finally, from Think Progress, I don't know why I keep saying finally. There's no finally. We're still going here on Media Monarchy, episode 97. Bush relieved his presidency is almost over. I guess finally would be appropriate there. Despite an economic crisis shaking the country, President Bush has reportedly been very relaxed. Former Missouri Senator John C. Danforth was at a fundraiser with Bush last week and said the president seemed relieved his presidency was nearly over. He looked as though he was about to shed this burden of the presidency. I took it as though I've done the best I can, I made the right decisions, and now it's almost over, said Danforth. The New York Times also reports that Bush has been telling people privately that it's a good thing he's in charge during the country's rough times because he has a good group of people in D.C. working for him. And so an update from the AP reporting that under Bush, U.S. clout in what it once considered its backyard has sunk to perhaps the lowest point in decades. As Washington turns its attention to the Middle East, Latin America swung to the left and other powers moved in. So again, Bush is relieved his presidency is almost over. And again, I will say, you and me both. Let's get back into the cast of war criminals that have been prepping the U.S. for staged inaugural terror. I believe this is basically the story of the last week. So first, from Kurt Nemo, Powell says, if elected, Obama will face crisis in January. So as if to confirm Joe Biden's comments about a generated crisis, that's a quote, quote, generated crisis, unquote, if and when Obama is anointed, General Colin Powell went on Meet the Press over the weekend and told Tom Brokaw a crisis will come along on the 21st or 22nd of January that we don't even know about right now. Does Sir Powell know something that's being kept from us commoners? Obviously, otherwise he would not make such a definitive statement. As an insider, Powell's privy to exclusive information. Like Biden, he is providing us with a hint. It'll probably have something to do with the engineered destruction of the economy. Our rulers seem to be fond of allowing their minions to divulge amorphous details of impending events. In addition to Biden's cryptic comments reported today in the neocon-infested New York Post, over the weekend, a website in upstate New York reported on a secret meeting between the Joint Chiefs of Staff and their European counterparts in the Adirondacks. You can hit that link and it'll link back to InfoWars.com. Secret meeting between the Joint Chiefs of Staff and their European counterparts in the Adirondacks, upstate New York. As Biden noted, the elite apparently have a diverse menu of scenarios to choose from, including crises in the Middle East, Russia, or the economy. Having a heavy hitter like Powell weigh in adds credibility to the possibility of an engineered event occurring. Now, if we move to Empire Burlesque and the great writer Chris Floyd, Obama's new advisor stands by his war crimes. Just to be clear, Obama's brand new foreign policy advisor, Colin Powell, wants you to know that he continues to support the decision to launch a war of aggression against Iraq in March 2003 and act that, according to principles established by the U.S. and its allies at Nuremberg in 1945, is a war crime punishable by death. In fact, the only thing that Powell, the wise and steady statesman, the grown-up, the moderate, can find to criticize in the conduct of the war he helped launch is the fact that it wasn't savage enough to begin with. We should have surged those sand monkeys from the get-go, he told CNN as he aligned himself with the genocidal philosophy of noted moderate grown-up legal philosopher Glenn Reynolds, noted for his Augustinian endorsement of the more rubble, less trouble school of warcraft. Another one from Winter Patriot, Obama is humbled to be endorsed by a great American war criminal. We loop back around to the threatiganda from VP selectee Biden, predicting again an international crisis in the first 6 months of Obama's reign. The striking candor he talked about, an international crisis within his first 6 months in power, and of course he'll have to make possibly unpopular decisions. So Biden said, gird your loins. We're going to win with your help, God willing. We're going to win. But this is not going to be an easy ride. This cleaning the Augean stables, man. This is more than, think about it. This is more than just a capital crisis. This is more than just markets. This is a systemic problem we have with the economy. It's interesting, Joe Biden would mention Greek mythology to make his point. Augeas, that's A-U-G-E-A-S, or Augeas, one of the Argonauts, is best known for his stables, which housed the single greatest number of cattle in the country and had never been cleaned until the great hero Heracles came along. Apparently, Biden would have us believe Obama is Heracles, the son of Zeus, known for his extraordinary strength, courage, ingenuity, and sexual prowess with both males and females. Nice little Greek symbology there for you. So, there's another one asking aloud, I think it's Paul Joseph Watson, what will Obama's international crisis be? But before we wonder more about that, let's tie in the hat trick, the triptych of presidential selection threataganda from Joseph Biden and Colin Powell, and now Madeleine Albright. It's a statement of fact. Terrorists will attack after Obama wins.
If you were called into the Oval Office on January 21st by the new president, whoever it happens to be, and he said to you, General Powell, I need from you your recommendation on where I begin. What should be my priorities? Where would you start?
I would start with talking to the American people and talking to the world and conveying a new image of American leadership, a new image of America's role in the world. The problems will always be there, and there's going to be a crisis come along on the 21st or 22nd of January that we don't even know about right now. And so I think what the president has to do is to start using the power of the Oval Office and the power of his personality to convince the American people and to convince the world that America is solid, America is going to move forward, we're going to fix our economic problems, we're going to meet our overseas obligations. Restoring a sense of purpose, a sense of confidence in the American people and in the international community in America.
Without a doubt, the next president faces enormous challenges around the world. In fact, Joe Biden told a crowd of supporters that the world would probably test a President Obama within months of taking office. Joining me now with her perspective on all of this is Obama supporter and the author of the new book Memo to the President, now in paperback. You'll likely know her best as America's first female Secretary of State. Madeleine Albright is here this morning. Good morning to you. It's good to see
you. Terrific to be with you, Jim.
Love it. Brilliant.
Thank you.
It's on the front of the book, right?
Right.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
I want to ask you what you thought of what Joe Biden said yesterday in terms of this idea that now Senator Obama, if he becomes president, will be tested by an international crisis within the first 6 months. John McCain certainly picked up on that. Let's listen to what he said yesterday.
If Senator Obama is elected, Senator Biden said, we will have an international crisis to test America's new president. We don't want a president who invites testing from the world at a time when our economy is in crisis and Americans are already fighting in two wars.
Well, no question there what Senator McCain thought about those comments. What did you think about
Well, I think
Biden
it is it's just a statement of fact, frankly. And in my book, I talk about the fact that there are a lot of big issues out there, but that also something unexpected, you always have to be prepared for that. And that's why I actually think that Senator Obama is a terrific person to be president, because he has this capability of assessing the situation in a calm way, of listening to a lot of different opinions. And one of the things, John, that I talk about in my book is the necessity of having a president who is comfortable with different opinions, who has the capability actually of multitasking, of doing a lot of different things. And so I think that it is exactly kind of what I talk about in my book as the necessary part for a president.
But in terms of this being tested by international crisis, is that a suggestion that a rogue state or a terrorist organization may try to launch an attack on the United States and try to take advantage of what may be seen as, I don't want to say a vacuum of power, but, you know, when a new president is just getting going, all of the systems aren't necessarily in place right off the beginning.
Well, I think that what you see is the fact that there's something happening in the world all the time. I mean, nobody expected just a complete financial meltdown in this particular way, and I think that we just have to expect the unexpected. I also do think that what is very evident is that there are many systems that are put into place right away, and there is continuity on things. So I think that it's a statement of fact, and I think Barack Obama is a terrific person to handle it.
There's so much in there to break down, I don't really know how to do it. Of course, she says no one ever could have imagined there'd be an economic breakdown. Of course, many people have. It's all on the record. She also mentions continuity. She almost says continuity of government. So there we had Powell and Albright, war criminals, first class, endorsing Obama, and that's supposed to be some sort of indictment of the Republicans. I see it more as an indictment of the supposed progressive Democrats. So, former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, who believes killing 500,000 Iraqi kids was worth it, you should check out that clip, seems to agree with Biden and Powell that something will happen within the first 6 months or so of an Obama administration. Albright, like Biden and Powell, is an insider minion, so she may know something's up. It's rather suspect that all these voices were saying basically the same thing. Obama will be tested, either by an al-Qaeda attack, a war, or confrontation in the Middle East, read Iran, or Russia. So, from the Washington Times, Obama urges vigilance during presidential change. Obama said on Wednesday the U.S. must be vigilant against attack during the transition to a new president, no matter whether he or McCain wins the vote. A period of transition to a new administration is always one in which we have to be vigilant, Obama said. We have to be careful. We have to be mindful that as we pass the baton in this democracy, that others don't take advantage of it. That is true, whether it's myself or Senator McCain. So again, your hero, Obamasiah, still giving you the boogie boogie. Watch out. Al-Qaeda's gonna get you. A little more on Selection 08. Let's move more into West Virginia vote fraud, the coming ballot debacle, and possible resistance. First from CNN and Raw Replay, again returning to West Virginia, and the machines are not to blame for switched votes in West Virginia.
Meanwhile, there are problems. Early voting is underway, and there are some problems in Florida and elsewhere, from seemingly endless ways to cast ballots to, more ominously perhaps, voting machines that seem to have minds of their own. CNN's Sean Calebs is standing by in Miami. Well, let's go to Brian Todd. He's in Ripley, West Virginia, with the CNN Election Express, and I know you're checking into this, and what you're picking up, Brian, is disturbing. Tell our viewers.
Well, Wolf, the problems with early voting here in Jackson County, West Virginia, and the neighboring Putnam County have to do with what on its surface seems to be a fairly simple problem, but it is causing a lot of worry here. So we talked to voters and local officials to get to the root of it.
Calvin Thomas has voted in West Virginia since Truman beat Dewey. He's 81 years old now, and his eyesight is deteriorating. But when he tried to vote early in his hometown of Ripley and brought his daughter, Mick Clendenin, into the booth to help him, Thomas's vision wasn't the problem.
I went in there and pushed the Democrat ticket, and I jumped to the Republican ticket on the President of the United States.
Mickey helped her dad touch the screen a couple of times, but his vote for Barack Obama still clicked on John McCain. Then it happened to Mickey. Each time, poll workers had them repeat the process.
The lady came in, and she very nicely, she just said, oh, she said, it's just been doing that. So I said, just hit it again. So we hit it again, and this time it did go to Obama.
At least five voters reported the same problem in two West Virginia counties. State and local officials tell us these were isolated cases, that each time poll workers fixed the problem and the correct vote was cast. The machines, manufactured by a company called ES&S, will be used in several states this year and were among those that had problems in Ohio in 2004. Company officials tell us they've inspected the machines in West Virginia and nobody has cast an inaccurate vote. In Ripley, West Virginia, we weren't allowed to film the actual machines that had problems, but Jackson County Clerk Jeff Waitwright took us through the process with an identical machine and zeroed in on what he thinks happened.
And they touched on Barack Obama, or they thought they were touching, but their finger possibly rolled up. Now, if I roll my finger down, you can see that it looks like my finger is definitely on Barack Obama's box.
We asked Waitwright about insinuations in local news reports of political manipulation, since he and the neighboring county clerk are Republican, and in most cases, Democratic votes click to a GOP candidate.
If I was going to try to manipulate the machine, I wouldn't know how to do it to begin with.
Now, the West Virginia Secretary of State's office tells us it believes the problem stems from these machines not being calibrated properly. Essentially, that means the electronic boxes are not lined up correctly. But on his end, Jeff Waybright disputes that, saying that he believes all of his machines are calibrated perfectly. Bottom line, he says this, in most cases, was voter error.
Well, how many of these machines with this kind of format are there across the country, if we know, Brian?
The manufacturer tells us 97,000 machines of this type are going to be used in 20 states, Wolf. This is going to be going on all over the place. It is really up to people to, when you touch that screen, make sure it registers properly. You are allowed to touch it again and erase what you just did, but you've got to watch it very carefully.
Yeah, this is scary stuff. Stay on top of it for us.
If we jump to the Bluefield Daily Telegraph, almost 2,000 voters in three southern West Virginia counties have already cast their ballots before the approaching general election, and more are expected when one of the two weekend days for early voting arrives this Saturday. Residents waiting for their turn to vote have been filling the basement of the Mercer County Courthouse. Only ESNS iVotronic voting machines have been used. So, my friends, here in Portland, Oregon, home of the supposed safer way to vote, if you look at the bottom of your Scantron for your mail-in ballot, at the bottom it says Election Security and Systems, ES&S. Same company, different voting format, possibly same results. Speaking of Oregon, if we jump to the Salem News, RFK Jr. exposes GOP election maneuvering. NoVoterLeftBehind.net NVLB founder Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is the co-author of a major article in the new issue of Rolling Stone detailing the underhanded tactics that Republicans are now using to deny the right to vote to tens of thousands of Americans. Cited as a major resource in the article, NoVoterLeftBehind.net is now accepting donations of volunteers to fight back against the GOP campaign to steal the 2008 election. And so there's a link there to you to the RFK Jr. article, Block the Vote. And you should, of course, also check out Greg Palast. Between Greg Palast and RFK Jr., they've basically been documenting all the vote fraud of the past 8 or so years. If we move to The Guardian, ballot debacle predicted for November 4th. A perfect storm could be building for U.S. Election Day on November 4th because of a combination of sky-high voter interest, new ballot machines, and a shortage of poll staff. The independent Pew Group warned yesterday with a link for you to pewtrusts.org. The Washington-based group set out a long series of problems still facing the U.S. despite reforms aimed at avoiding a repeat of the 2000 and 2004 debacles. The launch of the 77-page report, you can download that 2-megabyte PDF for you, came as legal clashes over voter registration and hours-long lines formed outside booths set up for early voting in states across the U.S. Voting is now underway in 46 of the 50 states. And finally, from David Swanson over on globalresearch.ca, a chilling thought, a McCain win will be a theft. Resistance is planned. If your television declares John McCain the president-elect on the evening of November 4th, your television will be lying. You should immediately pack up your pre-packed bags and head straight to the White House in D.C., which we will surround and shut down until this attempt at a third illegitimate presidency is reversed. I'm not hoping it comes to this, of course. If it doesn't, because the official election results are credible and just, we should celebrate and prepare to lobby our government for real change. But if resistance does not come, and the people are scared, you'll maybe still be glad you packed your bags ahead of time, because you might want to look into tickets to Canada. Which, of course, you won't be able to get into. And that's, I think, the biggest fear. I hope everything could go down well. And like I said, I wish I could back up a few dozen steps and not know that these guys are both controlled puppet bastards, and look at it and say, obviously Obama's the better candidate, he should get in, and hopefully everything would go smoothly. I worry that that's not going to happen. So as we move from presidential selection 08, let's get more back into Police State USA with more details on the surveillance grid as they emerge. Again from Kurt Nimmo, now that two whistleblowers have come forward with allegations that the Bush neocons used the NSA to spy on military officers, American journalists, American aid workers, and others who were calling home from abroad, Democrat Jay Rockefeller from West Virginia is calling for another church committee investigation of the NSA. Rockefeller, however, and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid were briefed on the NSA snoop program in 2003 and said nothing about it. Rockefeller did write a two-page letter to Cheney expressing his, quote, concerns about the surveillance, but Rockefeller never did anything beyond that, such as, I don't know, contact a lawyer. That's from Declan McCullough for CNET News, who I believe was on Alex Jones' show just a couple days ago. Maybe he wasn't. I listen to a lot of podcasts and radio. But yeah, it's a limited hangout. So Rockefeller can now come out and say, oh yeah, we should look into this. But of course, as we just noticed and noted, Rockefeller, Pelosi, and Reid were all briefed on the NSA Snoop program in 2003 and didn't say a goddamn thing. So even though the Senate Intelligence Committee is officially charged with vigilant legislative oversight over the intelligence activities of the United States to assure that such activities are in conformity with the Constitution and laws of the United States. Not doing so well. So we had mentioned earlier, of course, James Bamford and the Shadow Factory, and so it all ties in with Rockefeller.
James Bamford has been covering the National Security Agency for the last three decades. He came close to a standing trial after revealing the NSA's operations in his explosive 1982 book, The Puzzle Palace. His latest book, which comes out today, is the third in his trilogy on the NSA. It's called The Shadow Factory, the ultra-secret NSA from 9/11 to the eavesdropping on America. Today we spend the hour with James Bamford. He joins us from Washington, D.C. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thanks, Amy. I appreciate it.
It's good to have you with us. Well, let's talk about Adrian Kinney's allegations, spying on Americans and international aid workers in Iraq. What's wrong with this?
Well, there's a lot of things wrong with it. First of all, they're wasting their time when they should be spying on trying to intercept communications to and from terrorists. That was one of the complaints that Adrian had and also Murphy Falk had, that they didn't join the military to listen to Americans doing pillow talks, because a lot of this was intimate conversations between Americans and their spouses back in the United States. They've been separated a long time, and you can imagine what a lot of those conversations dealt with. They were very personal matters, dealing with finance, affection, and so forth. So they felt that they were morally wrong by eavesdropping on these people and then just wasting government money and wasting their time by listening to things that had nothing to do with a war on terrorism.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things Adrian Kinney told us was that she was spying on journalists at the Palestine Hotel. She knew they were journalists. She heard what they were saying over time. Here she was in Georgia, but spying on those people, those journalists in Iraq. And she said she saw a document, she saw an email that put the Palestine Hotel as a bombing target. And she immediately went to her superiors because she was spying on them. She knew that they were journalists. She said that there are journalists in that hotel. She learned a lot in this spying. Is this illegal?
Well, it would have been illegal under the old original Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. The way they've sort of contorted the new amendments to the act, it's hard to tell what's legal and what isn't, because they've taken the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court largely out of the mix. And so much of what is being done is governed by secret rules known as UCID 18, United States Signals Intelligence Directive 18, which is above top secret. It's top secret code word. So what is legal, what isn't legal, it's very hard to tell. And I think that's why you really need a congressional committee to really take a look at this. What really needs to happen is a very in-depth examination of NSA post 9/11, actually pre 9/11 and post 9/11, the kind that was done in the mid 1970s by Senator Frank Church, the Church Committee. I think that's really the only way to get to the bottom of whether NSA messed up before the attack on 9/11 and whether they're doing things that are illegal or improper after 9/11.
Oh, they just messed up. Again, more limited hangout from James Bamford. However, the information is excellent. So it's Rockefeller and Pelosi and Reid and Goodman and Bamford and the NSA. So let's jump back across the pond to the leaders in Orwellian police state technology. This from Steve Watson. Interpol details plans for global biometric facial scan database. Global security authorities are to push for a huge biometric facial scan database of international travelers so they can cross-check everyone against a database of terror suspects, international criminals, and fugitives. Interpol, the International Criminal Police Organization, is planning to expand its role into the mass screening of passengers moving around the world by creating a facial recognition database to catch wanted suspects, this according to the London Guardian. The database will hold the records of every citizen who has ever traveled in and out of the virtually every country in the world, representing intelligence agency-style bulk interception of information and sounding alarms for civil liberties groups. 2 months ago, we reported on the moves underway to phase out passport control officers at airports and replace them with biometric face-scanning cameras. The automated facial recognition gates match passengers to a digital image stored on a microchip in the new e-passport. Interpol wants a facial database to be linked into this technology and to be used in conjunction with its already existing fingerprint and DNA databases, this according to Mark Branchflower, head of the Interpol's fingerprint unit. We've also previously noted the vast array of databases currently being employed by the intelligence agencies, government, and law enforcement agencies worldwide were designed to be linked together. They're designed to be linked together in a system which will tie in the management and control of all facets of life for citizens to one central hub. Earlier this year, we reported on the announcement of a vast intelligence program to establish a global biometric database known as Server in the Sky that will collate and provide an international information consortium with access to the biometric measurements and personal information of citizens across the globe, all in the name of fighting the GWAT. As reported by The Guardian, the plan is being formulated by the FBI with the cooperation of the home offices and law enforcement agencies of American allies. The technology is being supplied by our fine friends at Northrop Grumman. Thanks, private military industrial complex. Thank you for your command and control grid. If we move now to the Washington Post, Homeland Stupidity to take over airline watch list in 2009, coming very soon in January. So, government to take over airline passenger vetting. The Department of Fatherland Security will take over responsibility for checking airline passenger names against government watch lists beginning in January and will require travelers for the first time to provide their full name, birth date, and gender as a condition for boarding commercial flights. Security officials say the additional personal information, which will be given to airlines to forward to the federal agency in charge, will dramatically cut down on cases of mistaken identity, in which people with names similar to those on watch lists are wrongly barred or delayed from flights. The changes, to be phased in next year, will apply to 2 million daily passengers aboard all domestic flights and international flights to, from, or over the U.S., By transferring the screening duty from the airlines to the federal government, the Secure Flight Program, with a link to TSA.gov, and you can read more about Secure Flight. It marks the Bush administration's long-delayed fulfillment of a top aviation security priority after 9/11. Fatherland Security Secretary Michael Son of the Devil Chertoff and Transportation Security Administration TSA Chief Kip is an idiot, Hawley said yesterday, that except in rare situations, passengers who do not provide the additional information will not be given a boarding pass. If you do not provide the data, then you are going to put yourself in a position where you are probably going to be a selectee, subject at a minimum to greater future security and scrutiny, Chertoff said in remarks announcing the program at Reagan National Airport. So there's another one from YouTube, and we can get it from the son of the devil's mouth, Chertoff.
Under Secure Flight, when travelers make a reservation, they'll submit their name, their sex, their gender, and their date of birth. And then the aircraft operator will submit the itinerary. And these additional data elements will allow us to separate the vast majority of false positives from the real people that we're concerned about. That's going to eliminate the traditional problem of somebody named John Smith, who is not a terrorist, John Smith, and who we can now differentiate because they have a different date of birth, that will take them out of that false positive. So that takes care of the first problem. The second problem is, how do we deal with inconsistencies among airlines? Well, the answer is, Let's transfer the responsibility for doing the actual comparison of screening from the airline to TSA itself. Let's have the airline send us the manifest, and then we will do the comparison of the manifest with the watch list. So under Secure Flight, passengers will submit their information to airlines when they make reservations. Airlines will submit encrypted information to TSA using secure data sources. TSA will compare the passenger manifest information with the updated no-fly list and selectee list, and then we'll send the result back to the airline if there's a problem. That's going to eliminate the inconsistency. Again, it's going to help eliminate the false positives, and it's going to upgrade our security.
Rumored dual Israeli citizen and Homeland Security chieftain Michael Chertoff. There's another one from threat level feds to take over airline watch lists in 2009 under the so-called Secure Flight proposal, which has been 6 years and numerous privacy scandals in the making. Airlines will submit travelers' personal information to Homeland Security. Now, with a quote from ACLU's legislative counsel Tim Sparapani from Washington Times, what remains to be seen is whether the revisions to Secure Flight will even work. The next post, Police State USA, gearing up for civil unrest. So will it be because your election was stolen or your ATM is broken? And by broken, I mean there's no money. You're going to get a little testy, but that's all right. They've got active denial and pain raise and military commissions and combat brigades all set up. So first, from globalresearch.ca, Senator John Warner supports the domestic use of military. A citizen of Virginia named Moya Atkinson wrote to Senator John Warner to express concern over the recent violation of the Posse Comitatus Act created by the assigning of U.S. soldiers to duty within the United States, reported by the Army Times, and, of course, as intended for crowd control. This, like other changes imposed by President Bush, of course, violates the Posse Comitatus Act. It also served to strengthen the threats of martial law that Congressman Brad Sherman reported the White House was making to Congress in order to win their support for the $680 billion giveaway to Wall Street. Warner sent back the following note with the link, you can read the whole thing, promising that rather than changing the president's behavior to comply with the law, we should, as with warrantless spying, habeas corpus, and etc., change the law to comply with the president's criminal behavior. And of course, John Warner would support the domestic use of the military. He put his name on the John Warner Defense Authorization Act of 2007. If we move to thehill.com, police prepare for unrest. That's their headline, not mine. Police departments in cities across the country are beefing up their ranks for Election Day, preparing for possible civil unrest and riots after the historic presidential contest. Public safety officials said in interviews with The Hill that the election, which will end with either the nation's first black president or its first female vice president, demanded a stronger police presence. Some worry that if Obama loses and there is suspicion of foul play in the election, violence could ensue in cities with large black populations. Oh, of course, it's their fault. Others based the need for enhanced patrols on past riots in urban areas following professional sports events and also on internet rumors. Democratic strategists and advocates for black voters say they understand officers wanting to keep the peace but caution that excessive police presence could intimidate voters. Another from Kurt Nemo and TruthNews.us, ACLU files FOIA on the brigade deployed in the U.S. The ACLU filed a Freedom of Information request under expedited processing to the Department of Justice and the Department of Homeland Security. The ACLU today demanded information from the government about reports that an active military unit has been deployed inside the U.S. to help with civil unrest and crowd control, matters traditionally handled by civilian authorities. This deployment jeopardizes the long-standing separation between civilian and military government, and the public has a right to know where and why the unit has been deployed. So, speaking of militarized local police, jumping to WAVY-TV-10 out of North Carolina, Blackwater works with Carolina cops for law enforcement. Law enforcement personnel from three jurisdictions, with an assist from personnel and equipment from Blackwater, searched a rural area in the county for a shooting suspect. So the actual situation isn't all that important. It was a shooting and they were looking for a guy. However, it's interesting to note that they called out and got Blackwater and their canine unit and a helicopter. So Blackwater, not USA, remember, it's not Blackwater USA, it's Blackwater Worldwide, helping with local law enforcement. If we get to anti-fascist calling, Tom Burkhart's great blog, antifascistcalling.blogspot.com, also usually posted up on Global Research, curbing social protest in America, microwave non-lethal weapons to be used for crowd control. There's that phrase again. So, Tom Burkhart writing, back in July, I reported that Raytheon, of course, number four on Washington Technology's top 100 list of prime defense contractors, was developing a microwave non-lethal weapon system for the U.S. Army. Now, of course, they test them overseas, and they bring them back here. So, Aviation Week also reports the program is expected to be awarded by year's end. A year after the contract is signed, the combination vehicle weapons will start being fielded at a rate of one per month. So, as is noted, they're going to mount these pain rays on Ford 550 commercial trucks. So, with the American automotive industry in a death spiral as a result of capital's historic credit crunch, what better means to rescue the industry than by buying a fleet of Ford 550s for crowd control? Particularly handy for deployment in American cities should rioters object to another stolen presidential election or the state moves to terminate what little is left of the social safety net, all in the interest of kickstarting the recovery, of course. Silent Guardian is a product whose time has come, and you can link and read about Silent Guardian on Raytheon.com. Moving to Atlanta, the Atlanta cops are rolling out their SWAT APC, anti-personnel carriers. It's no big deal, insists the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, with a link for you to the original article. It's just the local cops with a $500,000 APC. For you civilians, oh, I'm sorry, it's armored personnel carrier, not anti-personnel. I'm just letting my personal feelings cloud the military technology. Don't be surprised to see an army tank rolling down a street near you, chides the AGC. The Cobb County Police Department has refurbished a donated armored personnel carrier for officers to use in SWAT situations, and you can bet your ass it's certainly not needed for busting the average dope dealer, even one all hopped up on PCP. So that's our last bit of Police State USA news, of course covering all the police state technologies and the combat brigades and the warrantless spying and surveillance and crowd control and God knows what else. What we're going to wrap up on, what we mentioned earlier, video may show friendly fire cover-up in Iraq. This originally from Raw Replay and Raw Story and from Salon.com. Salon's Mark Benjamin has uncovered a shocking video taken from a soldier's helmet in Iraq, which seems to indicate that a friendly tank caused the death of two U.S. troops.
Can I hear going? Alright, so we're all good now, then, right?
So I probably missed all that cool footage.
Well, let's fucking just nail it.
Yeah, let's fucking that out.
There we go.
Is that incoming or outgoing?
Yeah, a lot of shit's going up on that side.
Yeah.
Can you see them in there?
Yeah. There's no windows.
Fuck.
I'm hungry now.
Stay here.
Fucking. Yeah!
You must be a good.
Ben, take that fucking shit. See the thing?
No.
Where? Right from the street that would stand up right here. Come up.
Look at the middle of the street.
There's a tank right there.
Oh, yeah. We're fucking that shit up, huh?
I don't know he's fucking blowing his fuck out of the customer.
Yep, I'm good. Dude,
get down the tank. Did he shoot at us?
I think so.
Hey, boss, they got!
Hey! Hey! Come on, quick.
You can watch that whole disturbing video up on MediaMonarchy.com. Video may show friendly fire cover-up in Iraq. And that's where we're going to have to leave it, my friends. I thought I could get to everything. I came close. So you have to stay tuned for more on Project Bluebeam and a possible attempted citizen's arrest on Karl Rove. So, however, first and last, let's read the creepy list of customers visiting MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. A couple interesting hits out of Beijing, China, so maybe MediaMonarchy.com isn't blocked in China. We had the CNC Group Beijing Province Network hit me up from revereradio.info, and also the ChinaNet Shanghai Province Network Googled Aaron Russo death conspiracy. We had visits from the Bloomberg Financial Market. The European Patent Office hit me up from my whatreallyhappened.com link about Barry Jennings. Clipper Magazine out of Friendsville, Pennsylvania. Hewlett-Packard out of New York City. Somebody there Googled Media Monarchy. We had Sprint out of Lorton, Virginia, Google Border Security TV show, which we covered a couple months ago, that possible Border Patrol reality show. Washington Mutual out of Seattle Googled the new financial world order. The Christ Hospital out of Cincinnati, Ohio visited, as well as Texas Children's Hospital out of Houston. They Googled Trent Reznor and the new world order. We had the Department of Fisheries and Oceans out of Ottawa Google U.S. bombers cloud seeding. Schlumberger Limited out of New York City, of course, private military industrial complex. They Googled Operation Majestic, FEMA. We had Xerox out of Norwalk, Connecticut, reading about another look at Jonestown. We had Applied Control Engineering Incorporated, again, hit me up from whatreallyhappened.com, as well as the Natural History Museum in London and the Royal Institute of International Affairs. The sidearm and big brother to the Council on Foreign Relations, they Googled Bayer, Iran. LaSalle University out of Philly Googled Aldous Huxley, media. North Carolina State University Googled HARP weapons, weather and mind control. Homeland Security and IBM connected together, at least as far as their IP address says. They're reading about crimes by Homeland Security agents stir whistleblowers alert. We had DreamWorks out of San Francisco, again, Barry Jennings. General Electric out of Connecticut, reading about the Silver Bridge collapse in West Virginia in 1967. The DOT Network Information Center out of Alexandria, they Googled vibrant response exercise. Of course, the recent terror drill where our military guys were responding to a 10-kiloton nuke in the homeland, and of course, those are the very same guys that are now assigned to NORTHCOM and the Combat Brigade. We also had a visit from our own Portland State University, and I believe that visit was from my man Nathan, who's about to take the reins here in just a moment on the Portland Radio Authority. Finally, this morning, we had a visit from NBC Universal out of Universal City, California. They Googled secret uranium found and shipped to Canada. And when you Google that, MediaMonarchy.com is your first result. So, my friends, once again, thank you very much for getting the show and sharing the show and getting in contact with me at MediaMonarchy@Yahoo.com. So this has been Episode 97, October 24th, 2008. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. Back with you next week for a scary Halloween. It'll be mere days before the presidential selection. So we'll have our fingers and ears and everything crossed. Like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
thought police would get him just the same.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.